Hello, everyone. I'm Karen Webster, and the matchmaker is in. Today, I'm joined by Matchmakers co-author David Evans. David, thanks for joining me today.
Hey, Karen. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too, and Happy New Year to our guest, Jim Pratt, who is Senior Vice President and GM of Virtual Payments at WEX. Jim, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Karen, and Happy New Year as well.
Just quick question before we get started. Have you broken any resolutions yet? It is, after all, day three of the New Year.
That's a little unfair, but, yeah, I was not going to eat any sweets for the month of January. And I made it through January 1, but by January 2, I had slid back to my own way, old ways.
Yikes! Well, at least you got that day of resolution intact. So that's that could be a record, though. But one resolution that David and I make is every Tuesday to talk to interesting matchmakers about their businesses and some of the challenges that they face in operating and scaling these businesses. So thank you for joining us today so that we could keep our resolution strong.
Great.
All right.
Thank
you. Let's talk about WEX. And I think, you know, WEX is an interesting entity. You're a global payments company best known for fleet management solutions, but over the years has expanded beyond that to healthcare and travel, which I know is the neck of the woods that you look after. And in particular, with a product, the virtual payment card, that is an interesting solution to a friction that the corporate travel industry is facing. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that friction and how you're solving it?
Great. Yeah, thanks. So we have to go back in time quite a ways. Actually, we launched this product initially way back in 2000. And we launched it initially in the online travel agency market, you know, the OTAs, Priceline, Expedia, Orbit, Travelocity. Those were companies that, you know, at this point in time, almost everybody, and certainly all millennials, use those companies to book travel. But back then, it was a relatively new concept, and they were having a lot of success, and they were able to scale fairly rapidly in terms of acquiring customers and on the demand side, and then aggregating hotel accommodations on the supply side. What was difficult for them and what they were not able to scale well was payments, and particularly cross-border payments. When you think about travel, it's probably the original cross-border payment industry. So a travel agent in New York needs to make payments to hotels in Sri Lanka or Melbourne, Australia, or anywhere in the world, and vice versa. So that was the problem that they asked us to help them solve. How do we make cross-border payments in a way that's simple, secure, and scalable? And we thought that there might be something around leveraging the card networks, the MasterCard and Visa card networks, because one thing they have is a huge global footprint. So that's a plus. And the second thing they have in addition to that footprint is merchants just know how to use the card. They know how to process them. There's no special hardware or software. There's no special process they need to be taught. You know, the payment doesn't have to come with instructions on how to process it. You give a merchant anywhere in the world a card number, an expiration date, and a security code, and they'll turn that into a payment for themselves. The disadvantage, obviously, with that is cards, and particularly transactions that are not face-to-face, but cards that you transmit, you know, over the phone, over the internet, over fax. It's difficult to track who gets a hold of those card numbers and what they might be used for. And of course, the whole idea of fraud, and in particular cyber fraud, that's a big, big issue today and one that we hear about all the time. And that was just beginning to be sort of a big concern back in 2000, especially for companies that were trying to make their living on the internet. They were trying to convince consumers, hey, it's okay for you to give me your card number. I'll process it for this transaction. I'll make it safe. And then I'll deliver you, in the case of travel companies, I'll deliver you a travel experience. So, you know, how do you take the footprint and the ease of use of the card networks, but then, you know, protect it in such a way that, you know, you're not going to run into a lot of fraud? And so what we did was we said, hey, what if we create a card number in real time, a 16-digit card number? We set the transaction amount equal to the credit limit. So if they're going to pay a hotel $250, that's the credit limit on the card. And there are other controls that we could put in around the type of merchant that could process, the number of transactions, et cetera. And then when we send that card to the merchant, merchant uses it, they process it as they would any other card number, just the way they process something if you walked in and gave them your credit card. But the advantage is because the credit limit was equal to the transaction amount, once that transaction happens, even if somebody gets a hold of that card number, you'll get a decline because you've maxed out the credit. And because we did it as a one-time, single-use card, if somebody tried to do another transaction, a second transaction, there's a double layer of security. Again, it would decline. So, you know, we had simple down because we were using existing capability. We believe we had secure down because we essentially eliminated, the possibility of fraud and especially cyber fraud. And then the last thing we needed to really tackle, particularly if we were going to grow with the travel companies, was scalability. So it's one thing to do something, hundreds or thousands or even hundreds of thousands of transactions, across a limited geography. But, our program at this point, we're making payments in 200 countries around the world on a week in, week out basis and doing tens of millions of transactions. So how do you take the same?
For people who aren't kind of deep into the payments industry, maybe a simple question for you. So how on earth do you just go about making up card numbers? it's not an obvious thing, perhaps, to many people.
Jim sits there with his little spinner, and he just randomly assembles numbers.
And how do you get to do that?
We have a 16-digit random card number generator. No, that's actually a great question. So most people are used to thinking of a card as a physical piece of plastic. Now that's starting to go away as people are doing mobile payments and those kinds of things. A physical piece of plastic with a card imprinted, even in raised numbers on it. But there's another way to generate card numbers where the plastic is never created. You generate a card number, and you never intend for it to actually exist in the physical world. It's only going to exist in the virtual world. And so that's something that we did. We generate, in real time, we generate these 16-digit numbers.
You did that as a authorized issuer of cards.
Absolutely. So, and most people might not realize that MasterCard and Visa themselves, those companies, do not issue cards. MasterCard doesn't issue cards. Visa doesn't issue cards. What they do is they run a service that allows banks to issue, under their rules and regulations, either a MasterCard or a Visa card. So WEX owns a bank called, and you're going to be blown away by the innovation here, WEX Bank.
Wow.
And so WEX, yeah.
Very
clever. That's the marketing, right? So we didn't want any confusion there. So WEX owns WEX Bank, and WEX actually issues these MasterCard and Visa card numbers. And so we're allowed under the rules and regulations of those companies to create 16-digit numbers, and we can choose to create a plastic and put it on plastic and go out in the world with plastic. And some of our customers do have plastic, but the majority of our customers are just using the numbers. And we've got millions of them in our database, tens of millions.
So Jim, help us understand this ecosystem. So you have this virtual payments platform, and the travel operators are one side of the platform. But is the other side a corporate traveler or a consumer that is trying to book their reservation using Expedia or one of the other online travel services, or both?
That's a great question. I would say initially all of the customers for Expedia, Priceline, et cetera, were consumers. So it was really focused on the leisure traveler. But as you know, many things that start as consumer trends or consumer services make the leap into the corporate world. someone says, boy, as a consumer, this is a better way of doing things, an easier way of doing things. Now I come to work, I want that same ease and simplicity. So over time, all of the major online travel companies have begun to service first small businesses and then even middle-sized businesses. So they're offering them the same access to a huge worldwide inventory, the ability to compare prices in a given market or a given city very, very quickly and get the best deal and those kinds of things. In fact, the larger OTAs even have divisions that are specifically focused on business. It's usually small and medium size as opposed to the large corporates, but specifically focused on business. Even Airbnb, which feels like the ultimate leisure type of travel booker, they talk quite a bit about the number of corporate business people that are using Airbnb to book when they travel for business, and particularly among the millennial generation.
Interesting. So how are you getting the corporates on board? I understand how you're getting the online travel services on board, but help us understand the other side of the platform and getting those guys to jump into the boat with you.
So when you say corporate, there's two ways to look at that. One would be corporations that are using travel management companies to do the booking for them. And so 4 or 5 years ago, we began targeting those types of companies. And they've got similar issues to the online travel company in the sense that they need to make bookings around the world. They want the simplicity. Security is extremely important to them as well. And particularly the large one, they need a fair amount of scalability, the ability to really handle a lot of transactions. The other piece of it is, and this is true to a certain extent with the OTAs, it's not just making the payment, but it's having the data around the payment. So one of the major differences, as I'm sure most of your listeners know, between a consumer transaction and a B2B transaction, and a consumer transaction, if the consumer wants any data at all they want is what was the date it happened, what was the name of the vendor, and how much, so that they can sort of double check when they get their statement. But corporates typically want more information than that, and they want it typically in an electronic form so that they can upload it to some kind of financial package back in the home office. And so that's all part of our solution. We do auto reconciliation into financial packages, and we capture a lot more data around the transaction than simply date, merchant name, and total amount. So that's pretty important.
So thinking back to the business, in the year 2000 and now, 17 years later, a lot has changed. Obviously, it's a lot easier to use these online services, and you can use them from a variety of devices. And as you pointed out, it really does cross the leisure line to corporate bookings and so forth. What are some of the significant shifts in the business that your platform has had to accommodate in order to sustain the growth and the scale of the business?
I think probably the biggest one, well, first of all, being built for large numbers of transactions, but I think the biggest is as we really began to bring this around the world and not just make payments around the world, but also sell it into travel companies around the world. And we're now selling this on 5 continents and have customers on 5 continents. There's a need to be able to transact in local currencies. So we settle today in 22 currencies around the world, most of the major currencies. And, we continue to add to that. I would say that may be one of the biggest features, and it's very important. I think the other thing, and this is something that we spend a lot of time thinking about, is regulation. So financial services are one of the most heavily regulated industries in any country in the world, and the regulatory environment can vary quite a bit. And even in countries that are very open from a regulatory standpoint and want to encourage innovation and they want to encourage new ways of doing things, still because it's about moving money. You know, they're very careful about what you can do and what you can't do.
And then so you guys are focusing on one of the most highly regulated financial transactions there is, which is cross-border payments, right?
Which is cross-border payments, absolutely. And so that's really interesting. You know, we opened an office in Singapore about 2 years ago, so we've had some increasing exposure to the Asian market, and there's some incredibly cool things happening there because they don't have a lot of the legacy infrastructure we have in the West, in places like the U.S. and Western Europe. And in some ways, the things that we talk about here in the States, like the wide proliferation of mobile payments, that's already happening in places like India. And in fact, several weeks ago before the holidays, the Indian government, in order to accelerate the move from paper, from essentially cash, to electronic payment, they took a huge percentage of the physical paper. They just completely took it out of circulation. And so now folks are forced to look at, you know, debit cards and other electronic means of payment. Some really neat stuff happening in China as well. You know, mobile payments, mobile everything really is, a whole mobile way of life is really taking off. So there's a lot of really neat stuff happening over there. But again, it's happening in a way that the government is looking at very, very closely.
I was going to ask you what the proliferation of mobile wallets means to the business, because, you know, as you think about, how corporate travelers are using their devices to do a lot of different things. I mean, clearly they're booking, or someone is making their booking on their behalf, but there are a lot of opportunities to extend, you know, that experience and the simplicity and secure method of transacting, especially if you're doing so in the, you know, under the corporate auspices, to use your virtual payment methods for those situations as well. Have you thought about that at all?
We have. We look at it a little bit differently. Or when we look at it, here's what's significant to us: the technologies behind things like mobile wallets, tokenization, and those kinds of things. We see those as technologies that we can leverage in more traditional business-to-business, and especially business-to-business cross-border payments. So not so much the traveler physically present at a hotel or a restaurant or paying for a taxi cab, but really rather the business paying on behalf of that traveler, booking an airline ticket, you know, prepaying a hotel room, those kinds of things, and using some of those technologies, again, like tokenization, as a way that's potentially adds additional safety and security to the transaction.
What happens in a situation where a traveler checks into a hotel and there is a mistake in the booking, or the booking needs to be extended for an additional night? Does that have to go back through the process and another account number created? Because I guess you can't add on to the reservation because you've maxed out the credit limit. Does that create friction for the traveler or the corporate travel manager?
It can in some instances, yes. And the ideal transaction would be one in which, so when you think about it, so let me describe the typical OTA transaction. You may not think of it this way, but whether it's for leisure or for business, you make a payment at Expedia and they charge your card. And then Expedia uses our virtual card to make a payment to the hotel that you're ultimately staying at. So that's two payment transactions for one, you know, let's call it a physical transaction, your hotel stay. If there was a way to link those two so that we could offer the same level of safety to the consumer and their card that we do with our virtual card, that could be a real game changer. And if we were able to do that in such a way that we didn't give up the protection, but also left enough, call it elasticity around the amount, that it could, we could accommodate extra days, or we could accommodate, additional ancillary charges, that could be a real game changer. And it's something we think about. It's not, to be candid, it's not something that we've solved yet, but it's something that we do think about.
when you think about the business and you think about this is the question that David usually asks. I'm gonna preempt him a little bit on this. When you think about the 17 years of the evolution of the business, was there a point in time where you felt as though you had, you know, the traction or the ignition, and it was about scale versus the slog that is involved often in these businesses in just getting to that particular point in time?
Yeah, absolutely. And you can see, we could feel it happening at the time. It's not just that looking back, we say, oh, that was the tipping point. You could feel it happening. And there were a couple of indicators. One was we had hotel chains calling us up, you know, literally cold calling things and saying, hey, we need you to go to XYZ travel company and get them signed up on your virtual payments capability, because we want to do business with them, but without this virtual payments capability, there's just too much work, it's too manual, there's too many errors, there's too many calls, phone calls between us and them. So, you know, they're waiting for your call. So, so that was one. The second thing is we took this to Europe about 5 years ago, and not really knowing, we did a little bit of market research, but not really knowing if it would catch as quickly as it caught here. And it actually caught even more quickly than we thought it would, and we were signing up travel companies almost from day one, before we even had much of a presence there, physical presence. And then I would say the third thing is, the sincerest form of flattery is imitation or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 6 or 7 years ago, some of the banks began to come out with their single-use cards and their virtual cards, and you know, at this point in time, that whole virtual card concept is a standard part of many banks' offerings. You know, we can do check processing, we'll do ACHs, we can give you physical plastic, or we also have a virtual card product. So, mm-hmm. you know, those are some of the indicators.
You know, the first part of that is a story that I hear a lot from matchmakers, the notion that, you know, the first phase is you're going out and you're trying to persuade early adopters to come on board, and you get to mm-hmm. a point in time where people are actually approaching you in order to buy, and that tends
right.
to be the tipping point for a lot of these platform-based businesses, where you start getting, you know, more inbound sales calls as opposed to the initial slog.
Right. Yeah, it's really exciting, and that's. When I say that's right at that time, we felt like, hey, we've really got something here. And things started to really speed up, both in terms of the number of customers we were signing, the number of transactions and the dollar volume that we were putting through, and also the geographic spread of the program. It really started to accelerate.
Jim, a question about other use cases. So as you describe the virtual mm-hmm. card product, it strikes me that there are other use cases outside of travel where this could be quite applicable, perhaps even in healthcare, another vertical that I know you guys are very active in. Have you thought about platform extensions like that, using this as a launch point?
We have. I would say that, you know, one of the reasons why we've had the success in travel that we've had is, and why we continue to have success in travel, even though we've got a lot more competition today than we did 16 years ago or even 5 years ago, is because we've got a lot of travel expertise on the team. So we've hired, obviously we have a lot of payments people, and we've got bankers, because that's what we are, we're a payments company. We've also gone out and hired travel talent from travel management companies, travel agencies, online travel companies, to help us understand what are the nuances that's going to make this more of a custom fit in the travel space. And we're beginning to look at doing that in some other markets. So you mentioned, Aaron, you mentioned healthcare. Here in the U.S., you know, there's somewhere between $500 and $800 billion in payments being made from insurance companies to medical providers in the form of a check. And so, you know, hopefully we don't need to spend a lot of time explaining why that's tremendously inefficient. But if you, I'm not even sure what my personal checkbook is, to be honest. I think I have one somewhere in a closet, but I don't use it in my personal life, and most people don't anymore. But in the business world, the B2B world, and particularly here in the U.S., there's still quite a number of checks that get sent out. So these insurance companies are literally printing a piece of paper that's called an explanation of payment, which is like the explanation of benefits that you get as a patient that says all these procedures and all these codes and here's, you know, how much we're going to pay you, and a check, and they're stuffed into an envelope and a stamp is stuck on, and they're mailed to a doctor, a hospital, a pharmacy, who then opens it up and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So perfect use case for virtual, right? Because we can send electronically the virtual card with all the safety and security and simplicity that I talked about earlier, along with an electronic explanation of payment. And they can upload those into their patient management systems and be off. So that's something that we've been looking at and that we've begun. We've got a few customers in that area. Another area that we're beginning to look at is aviation, and not you know, not Delta or Southwest, but private aviation and cargo. So these are folks that are flying planes all over the world. There's a tremendous volume of payments that are being made. A lot of it's for fuel, jet fuel, but not just jet fuel. You know, hotels, catering, ramp fees, et cetera. And there's a variety of ways that folks are making payments, everything from cash to checks to a whole pocket full of cards. Some are probably using mobile wallets. I would hope that some are at this point. But that's another area where, you know, it feels to us as if there's a huge opportunity to simplify and to take some of the friction out of what really should be something you don't even have to think about, which is making the payment.
One final question as we wrap up. We generally like to get a sense from matchmakers where they derive inspiration from other matchmakers that they observe in, you know, either in your space of payments or outside of payments that you think have really done a good job of solving for frictions and doing it in a clever way to benefit stakeholders. Any particular?
And we have a rule here. The rule we've developed is you can't say Uber.
Yes, everybody said that. We had to do that after the first five all said Uber. But anyway.
Okay, but I do like the way they do it. But I won't say Uber. And the one that I immediately thought of, to be candid, is Amazon. I think they're brilliant. They're brilliant around the customer experience in a number of ways. I think Amazon Prime is brilliant and all the things they do around it. But they seem to be driven from a payment perspective to make the payment event a non-event, in the sense that you almost don't know that you've already paid for it. You really they keep you focused and engaged on figuring out what it is that you want. And then somehow, and then once you figure it out and you press a button, you get a screen that says, it's now on its way, it'll be there in 2 days, and we're not charging you any shipping. And the payment is just sort of, you know, included in that. And I think that's brilliant, and I think that's, when I think about where I want to take WEX and our virtual payments capability, regardless of market, regardless of geographic region, that's kind of the ideal I aspire to.
Yeah, they've done a great job of creating a seamless customer experience and certainly using that to innovate lots of facets of retail and even logistics. They're an amazing company to watch for sure.
They are an amazing company to watch.
David, any final thoughts from you before we let Jim on with his day?
My New Year's resolution is not to have any more final thoughts. So I'm gonna pass on the final thoughts today. You already broke your New Year's resolution, Karen, which is not to preempt me with asking questions I would have asked.
Okay. Well, see, I at least I'm consistently breaking New Year's resolutions. So my final thought
is I thought this was really a fascinating conversation, a really interesting business, and I agree with Jim. I mean, there's just a lot of friction out there and a lot of potential out there for these kinds of these kind of payment solutions. So that's not a final thought, but it's a observation.
Thank you.
It's an observation. Well, but I also think that, you know, we often don't talk about the B2B nature of solving for friction, and I think this is a good example of a big friction that a very clever solution was able to solve, and obviously do it in a way that has ignited in the travel vertical and has inspired other thoughts as well. So Jim, thanks for all of your wisdom as we all get back to work on the first workday of 2017. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you, Karen, and thank you, David. Happy New Year.
Thanks, guys. Take care. Happy New Year.
And to you too. Bye-bye now.
Bye.